All right, well, some kind of miracle today. I remembered to bring my glasses with me to the studio. So that sign says a plus. It's probably funnier if I don't read it properly the first time. So, Greg, could you... Thank you. Thank you, Greg. All right, here we go. Remember, guys, you are all a big part of Weibo TV, so the better you are, the better BJ is. You see that nice lady right there? She's giving me a sign, and that sign says we are on in 10 seconds. So let's get ready to have a good time. Joining BJ on the show today is Maz Jabroni. All right, here we go. This is exciting, isn't it?
All right, everyone, quiet on set, please. In 5, 4, 3, 2...
Hello, everyone. I'm BJ Mendelson, and I am recording another episode of Weibo.tv. I'm joined today by Maz Jabroni. Maz, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am well. Thank you so much. It's nice to put like a face to the name because I'm so used to hearing you on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah, and same with you. I know your name, and again, the face. It's like you're in 3D. It's amazing.
Right. You've got a lot going on. So. When I ask, what are you working on? Which one do you want to start with? The stand-up special or the podcast?
Well, you know, the stand-up is a tour. I'm doing the tour right now. I mean, the special's been out for a little bit, but the tour is called I called it the Things Are Looking Bright Tour.
Right.
And yes. I named it that in spring of 2021, right when the vaccines were coming out, because I thought everyone will get the vaccine. And we'll be done with this. And then quickly it was like, wah, wah, wah. Yep. but we've continued to do the tour, and there was some peaks and valleys, you know, when numbers would go up, you'd go to a town. Like I remember going to New York City to do Caroline's, and I was getting messages from people saying, oh, I'm not coming out because I'm not comfortable yet. But then more recently, as we saw the Omicron numbers go down, people started coming out to shows. So, you know, adding shows, or people are laughing. People are really just really, really excited to be out again, as are we.
Yes, I am absolutely feeling that. You know, I've been mostly indoors for the past 2 years, so I'm glad to hear that. Let me ask you that. Like, so were you touring right as it broke out, or like how did that break down in terms of the timeline?
Well, the timeline, you know, first of all, when the whole thing first hit in March 2020, I had a whole tour scheduled. And it's interesting, I always point out, like, when there's some people in America who obviously they say, oh, socialism and capitalism, I mean, socialism and the communism is going to take over. I go, no. I go, America at its heart is such a capitalistic society that if you remember, the government didn't shut us down. The NBA shut us down. It was when the NBA decided not to play anymore. Everyone was like, oh, we better shut down. So my tours were all still scheduled to go through in March of 2020. And it wasn't until that stuff started happening where the NBA shut down, where everyone goes, oh, we should shut down. And then, of course, we're all grounded. We're doing Zoom shows. We're doing some drive-in shows. And then throughout the pandemic, I think even around at some point in you know, late pandemic, late 2020, I think there was a couple of states like, you know, Arizona, Texas, Florida, some of those places you can still go perform, and they had their COVID protocols. And so but again, it was basically in the beginning of 2021, like right as spring hit, it's interesting, as the numbers go down, your shows go up.
Yep.
You know, right. And that's the direct correlation. And I remember being in Florida at some point, like when it was still happening, and it was interesting because we did a show at the Orlando Improv, and they were doing a 1/3 capacity, masked, and you know, we did the show, and then afterwards we went downstairs to maybe go grab a drink in an outdoor place, and literally we're outdoor having a drink. There's people inside this bar restaurant dancing and like, you know, getting close to each other. And I'm going, do they know there's a pandemic happening? Because it really felt like they did.
Yeah. I'm up in upstate New York. You know, if you go into New York City, people are very aware this is a pandemic going on. The second you leave the Holland Tunnel, it's like a free for all. So
it's crazy. It's nuts. And it's crazy in your mind because you're going, gosh, I don't know if how safe I am, right? And And it, again, it just leads you to this thing of like, I guess if people decide to be, you know, ignorance is bliss, right? If I close my eyes, maybe it's not happening.
Right.
You know, and I, you know, I didn't run into too many people on the tour, but I've had people, we both know a lot of people lost their minds. So there was a lot of people who were like, well, they're saying this is out there, but I don't know anybody who's gotten it. And I'm going, that's not how it works. That's not how science works. Just because you don't know anybody. So it was a balancing act.
Did you find, as the pandemic was going on, were you adjusting your set and material to kind of respond
I'll tell
to
you. Yeah, the one thing, BJ, that was interesting was it reminded me a little bit about the way the world was after 9/11 and going into the Iraq war and attacking Afghanistan. Because all of a sudden, those things that become so prevalent in the news, everyone knows what you're talking about. So after they attacked Afghanistan, if you said something about Fallujah, nobody knew what Fallujah was a month ago, but then all of a sudden everyone knows what Fallujah is.
Right.
Similarly with the pandemic, everybody knew day to day what was going on. And there was moments where you would come and do material that was, you know, because I was doing a lot of Zoom shows, and those Zoom shows, I felt like we were all, it was great. Like as a comedian, you know, if the audience is on the same wavelength as you with the general subjects you're talking about, it's, you know, it's 1,000% easier. So even like, you know, if, as you recall, when the protests were happening, Black Lives Matter protests were happening, I went to one in Los Angeles and I had to do a Zoom show that afternoon. And so coming back from the Black Lives Matter protest, going into the Zoom show, I was able to talk about everything I just witnessed, and the audience had been watching it on the news. And so it was this time when everybody was definitely going through the same thing together.
Right. Now tell me a little bit about the podcast. So, you know, like I mentioned, wait, don't tell me at the very beginning. And you're always, I always seem to run across you as a guest on other people's pods, but this is your own that you have been working on. So I'd love to hear about.
Yeah. So my podcast is called Back to School with Maz Jobrani. And the idea came to me when my kids were a little bit younger and they would always ask me questions that I didn't know the answers to. So I thought rather than going to Google, let me just bring in experts and we'll learn from them. And so every podcast starts with a question from my son now. And, you know, I'll tell him the guests are whoever they are and he'll ask a question. And it's become this situation, as you know, when you do podcasts, at a certain point you go, you know, you might start with like, I only want guests from this walk of life. And then all of a sudden you're like, well, there's interesting people in that walk of life. So all of a sudden our podcast has covered things from, you know, our latest two episodes had experts talk about Ukraine, right? This week's episode is an expert on NFTs. I've had former FBI guys on. I've had this lady who was a diver who goes underneath glaciers and does scuba diving. So a lot of interesting people and a lot of interesting subjects, and we just keep going. And it's fun to do, as you know, because you get to meet people, you get to be inspired by them. I always take a nugget or two out of every episode, and I'll go to my kids and go, oh, you guys need to, you know, this person put something in my head that's really, you know, a good thing that you should do. So it's been fun to do.
Is there anything from that podcast that's really surprised you that you've learned?
Well, you know, the thing, first of all, a ton of stuff. Like, you know, we had an evolutionary anthropologist who was just talking about the way our brains are developed. And he had this great study he pointed to. He goes, you know, male brain, female brain, very different. And he goes, for example, they did a study where they were looking at snake bites in the mountains. And they said men got a lot more snake bites than women did. But they said, more importantly, where did the men get their snake bites? Where did the women get their snake bites? Women were bitten on the ankle. Men were bitten on the wrists, which leads you to believe men were stupidly trying to grab the snake.
Yes.
Right? I mean, just like, you know, so some interesting things that come in like that. And as you know, in the world of podcasts, it's just an interesting, it's an interesting world because it's the challenge for viewership, listenership. Because every time I run into someone, and just like you said, they go, I didn't know you had a podcast. I said, yeah, I do. Check it out. Just a few weeks ago, I had a guy who was an expert on the supply chain. And he was telling us about how right now, one of the reasons the supply chain is so slowed down, first of all, the Chinese tariffs hurt us a lot. And Biden hasn't, lifted them yet because I guess because he would look weak, et cetera. But it's really been bad for us. Those tariffs that were supposedly, you know, make America great again. And he was pointing something out. Those crates, he said, that come to the ports. He goes, these guys make more money now shipping the crate back empty because the price of these of transporting the crates has increased so much. They make more money to send the crate back empty, which hurts us in trade. So he said a lot of these crates are just going back empty. And he was just pointing out a lot of stuff. Again, this guy was an expert on supply chain. So I think that if people are interested in the subjects, if you know, there's always something to learn. And even if you're not interested in it, you can sit there and go, oh, that's interesting. And the one thing that I guess the overall arching thing that I've learned that I repeat to everybody, there's a lot of interesting people doing a lot of interesting things.
Yes. Yeah. It's very easy to, if you grow up in an area like I am, where you're surrounded by Trump supporters, like let's say, right?
Yeah.
And then you have someone like me who is completely to the left. It's easy to develop a tunnel vision and be like, okay, I can't go to the people around me for help. But as you pointed out, you've got all these people out there that you can now access on the internet and go to for support and for education.
Yeah.
Hey, it's me, God. I know it's been a while, and I haven't been the best dad, especially this century. Well, I was going through some shit, and you know what? I'm not going to talk about it. All you need to know is that I'm doing commercials now. I've got bills to pay, too. Do you have any idea how much I just lost on crypto? A lot. A lot. And so now God needs your money. Like, for real this time. Not like all those other times every Sunday. You know who else needs your money? BJ Mendelsohn. So give him $5 by visiting buymeacoffee.com/BJ Mendelsohn. That website again is buymeacoffee.com/BJ Mendelsohn. buymeacoffee.com/BJ Mendelsohn. And if you don't give BJ your money, you and I are gonna have problems. Big ones.
Commercials suck, and hopefully one day we won't need them. But until that day comes, we have bills to pay, brother.
What the fuck is this copy?
I don't know, man. BJ wrote it, and I think he was high when he did it.
How do you know he was high?
I read through it, and I just have a few. I don't know, man. Just read it.
What kind of bills do we have to pay? Well, for starters, you wouldn't believe how much it costs to feed a super intelligent ape who wants to kill Superman?
Yes.
At first, he said he would pay BJ rent, but then some asshole told the ape about squatter's rights.
Yep.
And he's a supervillain, you know, so he stopped paying rent. Now we all kind of work for him. He's a terrible boss. One time he was eating some guy's face and just left the rest of him in the middle of the floor. Guess it's better than working at Amazon, though? Anyway, the ape's got this cool-ass setup in the basement of BJ's mom's house. You should see it. There's this kick-ass pool down there. I have no idea how you get a huge pool in the basement of a small house, but he found a way. Separate lines, he found a way. Now, if only the ape could remember to take out the garbage in his office before he leaves for the weekend. Everyone else does it. And that includes Stephen Wheat, who works in accounting and shits out of his mouth. Anyway, that's what's going on here in Harriman, New York, home of the...
Yeah, man, I'm pretty sure he was high, but let's just get back to it.
Now, let's get back to the show.
Podcast is phenomenal. Like it, anything that promotes learning, I'm all about. So I'm really excited to hear about that. Let me switch over to the questions I ask everybody.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear a bit about your creative process.
Well, my creative process, you know, my main thing is stand-up comedy. And the way I write my stand-up comedy is really on stage. And so what'll happen is, you know, I live in LA, and when you're in LA or in New York, you perform on a show. People that don't know, is it's like a continuous comedy night, so that you'll have 10 comedians each doing 10 to 15 minutes. And so I will go up at the Comedy Store, Laugh Factory, or the Improv, doing my 15 minutes, sometimes 20 minutes. And in that 15 to 20 minutes, I'll try two or three new minutes of something that came to me. Now, usually the things that come to me are either something through my life experience or through an article that I read or something that interests me. And I'll go on stage and I'll talk about it and try to find the punchlines, and I'll record it all on my phone. And so afterwards, on my way home in the car, I listen to it. I go, oh, that joke worked, that joke worked, that joke didn't work. So I'm not someone who sits down and writes in a notebook or sits and goes, oh, I need, you know, X number of jokes per day. My jokes just kind of evolve, and they evolve with my life. And by the way, I always advise comedians, I say, and this is like anything, I think, I go, write as much as you can and get up as much as you can. And similar to anything else, right? Put in a little bit of time every day, and eventually you'll see after 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, I've been doing this 24 years, you'll be like, oh, wow, I have 6 or 7 hours of stand-up specials. And the reason is because I'm not, for example, I have jokes of my kids when they were born. So I have jokes of them being babies. Now I have jokes of my kids being teenagers. So if I had still been telling my jokes of my kids being babies, then I'd be a dinosaur and I'd be done with. But because I go up there on stage, and I think the audience feels the sincerity of it when I talk about dealing with a teenager now or whatever's going on in my life. So that's really the process, is to try and keep writing and do it always on stage and record it and let it grow, evolve.
So it sounds like, would you say that the tool that you rely on the most would be being the phone and being able just to record the sets?
Absolutely. The phone is essential. A lot of times if I haven't performed in a few days and I'm heading to the club, I might pick up one of the latest sets on my phone and just listen to it on my way up to the club just to kind of refresh my brain. So absolutely, that's the number one tool. And then the other thing is just, again, looking at my own life. And a lot of times things come out of conversations. I just was texting with somebody after the whole Will Smith, Chris Rock slap last night. This friend of mine, she texted me, she said, I'm a little worried for you, having seen what happened yesterday. Please be careful out there. And I said, don't worry about me. I've implemented a strict no Smith policy at my shows. So it's like, that's a funny tweet. I go, nobody named Smith is allowed in my shows ever again.
Now, let me ask you, when you were first starting out and you were first looking into going in this direction, like, what was that moment where you're like, I want to do comedy?
You know, as a kid, when I was around 10 years old or so, Eddie Murphy was the superstar. And so I wanted to be like Eddie Murphy. And then I did some plays in school. I loved being on stage. The moment I got on stage, I did some musicals in the seventh grade. And the director was very complimentary. She actually had a thing where she said, because it was seventh and eighth grade. And I was a seventh grader, so I was one of the background dancers and singers. And she had told us, you're part of an ensemble. Doesn't matter how small your part is, you got to be there. You need to always be on stage, smiling when you're singing. That's a musical. So one day I was sick. Her name was Miss Bombright. I had a cold, and I go there and I go, Miss Bombright, I got a cold, but I came because you said we need to come. So I'm here today, just letting you know. And she goes, okay, so now I'm on stage. I'm smiling. I'm singing. I'm dancing. She stops the whole thing. Everybody stop. Look at him. Look at him. He's sick. He came. He's singing. He's dancing. He's smiling. You need to learn from him. And I was like, oh, she's talking about me. And so it was positive reinforcement. So I, all through high school, wanted to get into acting and comedy. I wanted to pursue this. But coming from an immigrant family, you know, I was born in Iran myself. And immigrant parents tend to have, you know, lawyer, doctor, engineer as their only three options. So yeah, I think my parents had no idea what a life as a comedian or actor would be. So it took me a while. I had many detours. I studied political science in college. I was going to go be a lawyer first to please my parents. Then I was going to be a professor because I thought maybe that's a good compromise where my parents will be, you know, happy with a job that's reputable, but I'll also be able to stand in front of people and talk. Yes. And then ultimately, when I was in my mid-20s, I was 26 years old, and I had a light bulb moment where I was like, you only live once. You got to live for yourself. Like, you really got to live for you first, and then you can make others happy. So it was when I was 26 years old. There was actually an older gentleman. I worked at an advertising agency, and the gentleman's name was Joe Ryan. And he saw me doing a play just as a hobby. And he goes, you're funny. Have you thought about doing this? And I said, you know, I've had all these plans and I'm just waiting till the right time. And he goes, listen, I'm in my 60s. There were some things I wanted to do when I was in my 20s, and I never got to it. So I was like, if you really want to do it, you should do it. And it was a light bulb moment. And I just dove in. I got back into some sketch comedy classes, got into stand-up comedy classes. And I tell people, the moment I decided to do that, like a weight just got lifted off my shoulders. You know, people ask me to go, when do you consider yourself successful in this business? I go, the moment I decided to do it was I was successful. Everything else has been icing on the cake.
I think that's spot on. And it also goes into my next question of, you know, if you can give one piece of advice to creators or creatives out there, like what would it be?
Gosh, it's hard to give one piece of advice. I mean, obviously the first piece of advice is go for it. If you really have this itch, go for it. Don't let your husband, wife, children, mothers, fathers, whoever, don't let them stop you. We all have that, right? I mean, even during the pandemic, I still have it. I still keep saying, I want to learn the piano. I learn a few chords, but I don't do it continuously, right? So really, if you want to do it, do it, and do it, you know, every day. Put in time every day, because if you don't, it's easy to get distracted and lose that passion that you had for it.
Right. So I got my final two questions for you. The first one is, where can we find all your stuff on the web?
Everything I have is under at Maz Jobrani. So on Instagram, at Maz Jobrani, Facebook, at Maz Jobrani, YouTube, at Maz Jobrani, TikTok, at Maz Jobrani. I have monopolized Maz Jobrani. So everything's there, and my tour dates are at MazJobrani.com. Go figure.
Nice. And my last question for you is, if you can give someone a shout out to that you think could use a little more attention than they're currently getting, who would that person be?
I'm going to give some love to my opening act. His name is Tehran. He's a fellow. His father's Iranian. His mother is African-American. He is somebody who I encouraged to get into stand-up about 10 years ago. He's been on the road opening for me. He hustles. He's a good guy. He's a talented guy. And he's at I Am Tehran. So you should reach out to him, have him on the show. Very interesting upbringing. Yeah, like I said, Iranian dad, black mom. Went to law school, like me, was detoured, and now he's doing stand-up and making a living doing it.
That's beautiful. Is there anything that you wanted me to ask you, or anything that you wanted to plug or mention before we go?
No, I'm good. As long as, you know, what I'm up to are the tour and the podcast. That's it. I appreciate. Oh, and if people want to watch me, I guess I can add that. People can watch my Netflix special. I have a special on Netflix called Immigrant, and I have a special on Peacock TV called Pandemic Warrior, so they can check those out as well.
You know, I'm pretty upset that the Mets are good now.
Why is that?
Because now we can't experience things like when they had a 97-year-old pitching coach.
You mean Phil Regan?
Yeah, that guy who played for the Brooklyn Dodgers. That team hasn't even existed for 65 years. Like, do you understand how close we all came to having this super old guy coaching the Mets? Do you understand the kind of comedy gold that could have been, like right now when we need laughter the most? He probably wouldn't even remember who was on the team. Regan would be in the dugout chewing tobacco and saying shit like, "Send in Willie Mays." And then one of the guys on the bench would be like, "Coach, Willie Mays is dead." And then Regan would be like, "The hell he is, get him in there."
I don't think Willie Mays is dead.
He's not. And I hope Willie Mays lives forever, I really do. But Willie Mays also hasn't played for the Mets since 1973. Anyway, I just want people to understand the potential joy that we're all deprived of now that the Mets are good.
Well, that's all for this week. If you enjoyed this episode of Weiwo.tv, you know what you need to do. Rate us and leave us a review wherever your favorite podcast can be found. That'll help people find this show and hopefully enjoy it as much as you did. You did enjoy the show, right? We're going to assume you did, because you made it to the outro. Most people don't. Be sure to follow BJ on Instagram at BJ Mendelsohn and tell him who you'd like to see interviewed next. You can also text your suggestions to BJ at 646-331-8341. But don't call that number. BJ says he's only going to answer if you're Melissa O'Neill from ABC's The Rookie. Also, only if you're going to ask him out on a date. We'll see you next time. Right?